welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The longer the war on Iran continues, the more damage will be inflicted on the global economy. This is not only about energy and fertilizers, but also about global supply chains. Once interrupted or broken, the nature of the global order could be fundamentally altered. How we come out of this is anyone's guess. Crosstalking the economics of war, I'm joined by my guest, Alam Saleh in Leeds. He is a senior lecturer in international relations at the Australian National University. In Malaysia, we have Mario Estrada. He is an expert in policy and economic modeling. And in Tunisia, we cross to Max Ail. He is a historian and author of A People's Green New Deal. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Alam, let me go to you first. In the most broad sense, what is happening to the economy? What has been happening for the last 70 days? And what can we expect in the next 70 days moving forward? Go ahead.
Well, this was perhaps the United States' last mistake in the Middle East and a very strategic failure, internationally speaking. It's in the age of decline of Western-led world order, we see that this mistake, of course, this strategic failure to enter the war without any pre-plan or any strategy to reach. Not only did the United States did not reach its own goals, but also failed to down Iran. And Iran today is much stronger than the before. Before the war. Therefore, Iran was able to undermine the United States' military superiority and was able to exchange this military confrontation into economic confrontation by using this energy security and closing the Strait of Hormuz. In one way or another, Iran is now has an upper hand. And in the negotiation, even in the diplomatic kind of means, Iran has its own conditions to impose on the United States. So President Trump actually and Netanyahu both have failed to achieve their goals.
And, yes, but fundamentally, Alam, fundamentally, they have failed the world as well, because we see this economic decline. Let me go to Mario. It was interesting. I was reading just before we convened here that a very popular Japanese confectionery company, they have to do their advertisements now in black and white because they don't have the chemical compounds to make their color packaging. Okay. Now, that's a minor thing. It's not going to change anybody's life. But a lot of things that are happening, particularly in Asia, and it's going to Europe and America as well, is that it's structurally changing the way people live. And given the fact that as we're speaking now, gentlemen, there's no end in sight here, what do you see happening to the global economy, Mario?
Well, I can see that we have a global inflation. People cannot rectify this one, but we have a global inflation. And additionally, I can see that slowly we're going to move to economic recession. And I predict that the next year, if the situation continues like this, we will move to economic depression, like in 1929, like in the United States happening last time. It's like the cycles of economics repeat again, the same mistakes we are doing. And additionally, I want to mention about food security. This one is is affecting all of us, not only the oil in the sense of transportation, but what made me worry is about food security. And additionally, need to remember that the transportation cost is moving up constantly, and the prices is moving everywhere, especially in consumption, goods consumptions, and moving highly. And this is made me worry because this global inflation, everywhere is this inflation. We can escape. It's not only in the sense of Middle East, United States, it's everywhere. And this is my prediction that we have hyperinflation, and very soon we have global unemployment. And companies start to cut people in companies to reduce cost production. And additionally, what I can see that this war not have date of end, and this is make more speculation in the oil market, and this is make me more worried about this situation.
Yeah, because it has a knock-on effect here. Let me go to Max in Tunisia. I mean, given the state of affairs, it's almost impossible to do any kind of economic and financial planning because we don't know what the future is going to be. And you yourself is an expert on the green revolution. I mean, this is one of the great miracles of international finance over the last 50 years is the green revolution. This is it's coming to a screeching halt. I mean, even American farmers can't get fertilizer. Max.
Yeah, in this way, we see two dynamics interlocking with one another. On the one hand, this kind of extremely externally reliant forms of energy procurement and food procurement and agriculture, all of these are revealing their limits, which is why you are going to see an accelerated push, for example, to solar, which will work in the favor of the Chinese. You will probably see some pushes, especially in the third world, towards more sustainable forms of farming. You're gonna see pushes towards self-reliance in terms of the technological suite, the technological options that a lot of countries are choosing, not out of any elevated ecological mentality, but as actually forms of survival, because less input intensive means less subject to the vagaries of the world market. I think the other thing we should always keep in mind is that this type of inflation is also a redistributive phenomenon, which is why it's a little more tolerated by the war makers, Netanyahu and especially Trump, than we might expect. Right? Who's going to be suffering? Are working class people in where I live, where I'm based, Tunisia, who are suddenly seeing the prices of their daily commodity basket go up by 7%, right? Whereas other people who actually are managing the supply chains are not going to come out of it nearly as harmed, which is why we see the stock market making record highs, right? So we have to keep in mind that this type of massive inflation is a Janus-faced phenomenon. It's also, it's not just harmful, it's also redistributive.
Yeah, we always have to remember when, the war makers, there's always a profit motive involved, particularly if you can know in advance, and I'm talking about insider trading, make decisions when it comes to the markets. Yeah, no wonder the stock market's doing well. Alam, let me go back to you in Leeds here. I mean, if you go back to the oil shocks of the 1970s, it was a supply problem. But what we will see now, it may be a production problem. There's no saying when the Gulf monarchies will be able to export again. I mean, we don't. It's a highly kept secret how much damage has been done here. But given the damage we've seen to American military bases, which was held secret for a long time, I would imagine that the production capacity of these countries is going to be limited, if not put out of order for a while. That's long term. That's just not, you know, the Strait of Hormuz. Alam.
Exactly, yes. In the 1973 oil crisis or oil embargo was important. It actually introduced the energy security to the world for the first time. However, it was not determining strategically the world order. What is happening now, however, is determining the future of the world order. We are entering the West-less or less Western world order now. The United States-led world order is no longer there. So the consequences of this United States failure in confronting Iran when it comes to the oil and energy security and geopolitics of the Middle East and the Persian Gulf region, however, is determining the future. I mean, United States failed in Vietnam, failed in Afghanistan, failed in Iraq, but that these failures did not impact strategically the international relations balance of power between the United States in one hand or and China and Russia on the other hand. The failure to confront Iran in this war did not only make Iran to emerge as a regional power, but also strengthened the position of China and Russia, and also weakened badly United States allies in position in Europe and in the Persian Gulf region, the Arab countries. So therefore, what this is, this the consequences of this failure, it cannot be compared to any other historical kind of examples. So this is the United States kind of a strategic miscalculation to enter a war, hoping that it will end soon, it will be short, it will be clean, but it wasn't. Iran was able to shift this military confrontation into economic confrontation, into geo-economy, and also into geography by controlling the Strait of Hormuz to be able to deter United States. And now United States has no easy exit plan or a strategy from this war, unwanted, yeah, and also the war of choice.
Yes, and those consequences everyone in the world is living with and will have to live with. Mario, there's no going back to the status quo ante. I mean, we can't go back to February 27th, okay? And there's a recognition around the world that you must become more sovereign, you can rely less on international law. And at the same time, piracy has reared its ugly head again. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, one more thing I want to mention is the dollarization of the Middle East. Exists a high possibility. Remember that now Iran wants to negotiate with yuan, the currency of China. Mm-hmm. And we can see that the context, the new geopolitical game is changing dramatically. The visit of Donald Trump to China is so many questions in mind that is generating a new order, a new world order now. And we need to see also that the speculation of the oil prices is very high. Sometimes it's not only the issue of Iran-United States war. Remember also the Russia-Ukraine conflict, that we have five factors that we need to mention about why we have a global inflation. And I want to mention first the tariff Mr. Trump imposed to all the countries around the world that is affecting the prices globally. Second is the war, the conflict between Russia and Ukraine is generating a very big issue also in the oil price. And also now with Iran and United States, and we need to remind the new economic powerhouse China they have.
Okay, on that note, Mario, I have to jump in here. We have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion of the economics of war. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the war on Iran. Okay, let's go back to Max in Tunisia. It's been a phenomenon we could observable for the last 20 years of how wealth and capital seek to go to Asia because of its security. And I think this conflict is only going to accelerate that. The Chinese currency has already been mentioned here. You have countries like the UK that freeze the assets of Venezuela. We have the Europeans freezing assets from Russia. Those two, you know, the US, the UK, Europe, they're not safe havens anymore. And wealth always wants a safe harbor. And China and other areas of the in Asia are fit the bill for global capital. Your thoughts?
So over the last 15 years, and especially the last 10 years, we have seen an escalating system of sanctions that in turn are reliant and rest upon and exploit and abuse the interdependence of the world system, especially the post-1990 interdependence of the world system. And now we have a system of what experts are calling weaponized interdependence. The problem of weaponized interdependence is that the vectors of interdependence, the links, become subject to suspicion. And when one of the links of interdependence is in fact a reserve currency, then it's going to cause a secular disinvestment in the US as the world reserve currency. And the US, the dollar is now reaching relatively historic lows in its percentage of world reserves, which makes the dollar and the system of imperialism based on the dollar, based on the US running current account deficits, all of that becomes less and less and less sustainable. This is part of why we could be seeing some form of shift within the world system away from an imperialism that is fundamentally tied to the use of the US dollar towards a more multipolar world system, which nevertheless is a multipolar world system whose direction, whose content really is up in the air. And this is why it's very interesting that we see what's going on in Iran, for example, is that there are calls from the street, from the people who are going out to protect steel plants, to protect power plants, to put themselves on the street, in effect, stating that if you are going to attack my country, you are going to be attacking me, stating that not only does the government have a duty to defend, actively defend the post-colonial political sovereignty regime, that is the state power that was conquered by the 1979 Islamic Revolution, but also to return to the promises of that revolution itself. That is the promises of social justice and self-reliance and national independence and liberating economics. And I think this could be one of the other signal effects of this war itself. That is, we are seeing a war turn into a process, possibly, of popular redistribution. And I think this is APACO, and it's the twin of the APACO phenomenon of the actual first use of the oil weapon. The oil weapon, by the way, was never used in 1973. This is something that's been written about, that's been written into the historical record afterwards. The radical states of Iraq and Algeria and Libya tried to use the oil weapon and actually cut off oil exports, but they were not able to do so because not enough states were under the hands of radical nationalists for the use of the oil weapon. And this is what makes the current phenomenon very different, is that the oil choke point is under the control of a government that is interested in defending its own sovereignty and is willing to confront the U.S., not only nationally, but also in the remainder of the region itself. And this really heralds a very important distinction, an important difference, an important transformation, possibly in our world today, which will be, of course, the victory, God willing, of the Iranian people and regional asymmetric militia against the forces of destruction as represented by the Gulf states, U.S. and Israel.
Well, the Gulf states, there you go. Alam, let me go back to you in Leeds here. Are they going to be able to reassert their position in the global economy? Because I personally have kind of always looked at these Gulf monarchies as just brands more than anything else, not really nation states in a normative sense here. Can they recover from this? And if they do, will they have to choose differently, if you know what I mean? Alam.
Yeah, of course, the region won't be the same anymore. The Persian Gulf region and the Middle East, the West Asia, will be changed dramatically in the aftermath of this war. This war will not end. It will be continuously changing and shifting from one way to another. Or in other words, we'll have just the absence of war, not peace in the region. So the new regional order will be defined by Iran and its allies, international allies like China and Russia, for sure. We will see the less, or probably the post-United States Middle East in the aftermath of this war. We saw that the United States did not only enter a war, which was a big miscalculation strategically, but also was not able to help and to protect its allies in the region, the Arab Gulf region. The United States was in the region in order to bring peace or security, at least for these countries, but it was actually the cause of insecurity in the region. All its military bases are empty. They are all destroyed. The Strait of Hormuz was open only a day before this war. All these Arab countries asked the United States not to enter this war, but the United States did. and of course Israel. And now the Strait of Hormuz is closed. Their economy is devastated, and Iran can even make more damages to their economy if there will be any more further escalations. And United States is not able to protect them. United States is 1,000 kilometers away from the region, in the Indian Ocean or in the Mediterranean Sea, is not present in the region by all means. So therefore, yes, the Arab Gulf State countries need to redefine, revisit their relationship with Iran, mm-hmm. surely with the United States and Israel, and they need to find the alternative to United States to bring a new regional security architecture in the post-Middle East, post-American Middle East, I would call it, and to redefine the relationship in order to find further security in the future.
You know, Mario, a lot of analysts looking at this conflict here like to choose winners and losers. I think all of us agree at this point in time the United States is a huge loser. Iran may be winning, but it's certainly been damaged, but it's not on the losing side of the ledger. What about China and what about Russia when it comes to this conflict?
Okay, something we need to rectify. We lose, all of us lose. He don't have winners and losers. All the world economy is doing badly. This war bring speculation.
Good point.
Break all the channels for distribution of the oil and the oil supply. Now, China and Russia, what is the new game? Now is we have a new geopolitical players. Now we need to divide. Now in different groups, in two groups. Now we need to discuss our multilateralism, and we cannot see any more globalization. What we have now is, I can say, we and this globalization. Last time we in globalization, we trying to integrate the markets, we trying to integrate the world. Now we have a new process we call this globalization. We are dividing regions, we are dividing countries. Now the nationalist domestic policies are more important than the global policies. Globalization brings to us the freedom of free trade, freedom of labor, mobility. Now it's opposite. Now we have restrictions. The United States brings tariff. Now we have closed economies. For example, the United States, with the new tariff system they have, say goodbye to the World Trade Organization. And this is what I want to mention here. The role of the World Trade Organization is gone. And we can see that it's the United States imposed tariff to everyone, but I want to say that this tariff is no real tariff. Actually, it's a manipulation.
Yes.
A political manipulation to convince and force countries to follow the instruction from the United States.
Yeah, it's the visible hand of the market, as you know. Remembering Adam Smith here, Max, is it appropriate, Max, for us to think of Iran's resistance as an resisting neocolonialism? Is this one of the last big neocolonial wars that is being fought against?
It would be very nice if that's the case. It would be very nice if this actually forces a substantial retreat of the only world empire, the only empire, which is the United States, and that it reconfigures its foreign policy to have a more humane and more peaceful relationship with the remainder of the sovereign states within our world. But I don't think it's the case, actually. The US is quite entrenched, for example, in Latin America,
yes.
Getting more entrenched, in fact, in Ecuador, in Venezuela. It is dictating terms to the Venezuelan state at the point of a gun in the Caribbean. It's extremely entrenched with pronounced and kind of encrusted neocolonial dynamics across the region and in Haiti. And so I don't think we will expect to see this end very quietly. And I don't think we will expect the U.S. to let go of its neocolonial empire within what it considers wrongly its own backyard. And on the flip side of that, when the forces of resistance emerge more forcefully, they are going to push the issue. So I think it's possible that the U.S. Violent footprint will be decreased in the Arab-Iranian region, although the relationship with Israel is a wild card, which really remains to be seen. No one will let go of that very easily. There's too much investment. There's too much arms trade. Israel too useful as a dervish of destruction. But there are other zones of war in East Asia, Ukraine, Latin America, that the U.S. will not let go of easily and will be happy to turn them hot, if it can't sustain the heat in the Arab-Iranian region.
As we wrap up here, but it is an indication that the empire can lose, and that may encourage others. Fascinating discussion, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in Tunisia, Malaysia, and in the UK. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.